Blog Talk Radio.
Able to connect and to talk and think about things Masonic for a little while and do it at your leisure. It all takes effort and commitment, and thank you for tuning in to our small group of relatively small group of listeners here on the program. For the program, we wouldn't have it any other way. Freemasonry has been unconventional from the start, and remains so to this day. Not a collective of a reenactment after what 500 years of history, a continuation, with that constant renewal that is within the members, and it is helped in its definition by the parameters of other things going on in the world around at the time, which constantly, like the stars, the configuration of the stars is constantly changing. Just the perspective is different depending on how close you are to those stars. And so as everything moves around in this constellation above us, so is it is happening in our lives. Thank goodness we are not living in one room. Thank goodness we are able to visit our mind power. And thank goodness we have imagination. We are not of the same nature in a way as we were at the beginning. That polarity has changed. The greatness that initiated this is our legacy. But to think that we have begun to appreciate and value the influence of those moments of inspiration that began our order is remarkable. If we're drawing a line anywhere artificially to wonder about how this all began, a combination of events at the time, and we accept that. We can all look for a sole source, but there was no Big Bang with the order, I'm convinced. It was a series of disconnected influences that came together. Hindsight allows us to study this, and it's one of the remarkable things about hindsight. The fact that you and I are the epitome and the value and the continuity of Masonry all wrapped up is for me a bit daunting. We have this growing sense, you and I, of the difference between the way Freemasonry is and perhaps the way it could be, what we aspire to achieve. Always improving. So in every aspect at a molecular level, each one of us has a role to perform. And in a way, a mindset that grasp the principles and the values and ethics of Freemasonry, all through unenforceable obligations. The effect of those obligations rests with each one of us. And whether we are able to commit to that is locked up in the secrets of our heart, where the great secrets of Masonry have always remained. Oh, we can chatter about other things later, but let's start this with a little bit of that audacious music, the music that pulls us all together, the music that was never supposed to exist. The paradox of oppression and racism and bigotry and meanness, the paradox of the great lies. This is jazz. Duke Ellington. And sitting in is one of the great horn players, John Coltrane. Just close your eyes, sit back, sip what you have in your hand. Enjoy the moment. Thank you. Still works, doesn't it? Still works in the sentimental mood. Let's move on to, we have a good commentary today. I won't hold back on that. I want to acknowledge our listeners from South Korea and Philippines, from Brazil and India. Nice to see things moving along in India and China, of course. And World Cup hosts, Russia, doing a great service to your country, really letting us see a bit more about the world through the eyes of a nation. Apart from the politics, huh? The cup half full, cup half empty. Here it is, the 24th of June. We've just had the solstice slip by again. Where I am, we're in this part of the world, it's overcast right now. But it's that kind of somber moment. It can happen in the middle of the night or at sunrise. Or when we can find a moment of to collect our thoughts in midday. Masonry it does have expectations. It doesn't happen necessarily easy, not supposed to be. It takes work. And if we're like-minded, I don't subscribe to the idea of talent, but I do subscribe to the idea of hard work and imagination. And I think that's encapsulates and incorporates each and every one of you. Today, the commentary is about the restlessness within Freemasonry. And see what you think about this. This is, I know that in the past I've spoken about Freemasonry being an anecdote. It's really, I think, an anecdote to lethargy, or in some cases even despair. That hopelessness when you're looking around and thinking, oh, well, you know, there's just a confusion of opinion out there. Some of it valid, some of it more political spin, some of it cynical, some of it just based on a low opinion. And then there's the misanthropes, you know, people that are just unpleasant and just don't like humanity. And here you are, part of that. That small glimmer of optimism, living proof of that a history of great ideas that continues, that sense of the universality of humanity, and the resilience of these ideas through the changes that have gone on through major. You know, the kind of carnage and major disgrace of nuclear weaponry, the thinking that this was something that because we have it in our hands, it can be used against our fellow man. The insanity of war, although as Margaret Macmillan's new book is demonstrating, it's one of the things that humanity does so well. If it's not happening, we seem to be able to search it out, and we seem to do it very well. Like, our wars are nasty and unpleasant. There's a lot of murder going on. More than the imaginations or the lack of imagination of politicians and military profiteers. It's more than that. It seems that we're able to reflect now on whether that's part of the nature of being a human. If it is, it's unsettling in a way to think that we have to go on these rampages and think, I don't know, is it thinking tribally that we have to go out there? We can not separate in our thinking the effects of other people on us and other cultures on us. And today, we're witnessing the great migrations that the global warming is triggering. Oh, if you're wondering, well, why so much migration is happening, millions of people a year are moving. Why is it happening? Well, if you think about the conflict, let's take, for example, the frequently disparaged part of the world, the Middle East. A water shortage has been a source of a big part of the mechanics behind the scene, the backstory to a military conflict. And we're seeing people clamor. They're coming to European cultures and a stand-up culture, a stand-up nation. Italy has been shouldering a considerable amount of the responsibility, full marks, for all that we learn and don't learn about our Italian brethren. There is something quite remarkable, and they're a beacon, an aspect of the conscience of humanity right now, asking us to re-examine how this ongoing burden is being shared. And I think it's fair. It's the same kind of mindset that's asking about the redistribution of wealth, the predatory, the end of, I like to think that predatory capitalism is going to end, but we know better. That's like, you know, we'd have to kill all the vicious animals in the jungle to be able to say predation is over. And that would mean we'd have to probably kill a lot of humans, because we seem to be predatory. We seem to even have the ability to kill ourselves, unlike other creatures. So we as we move forward, though, we're able to realize that we have challenges that raise questions, and we need to be able to examine the options. Doing nothing is always an option, but being silent is an option as well. It reveals things about us, and it's a decision made. Avoiding the decision is a decision made. So we come together with these to face something new. Our climate is changing. And we know that since the reports of 1981, yes, when, you know, the science group made some initial projections about the impact of global warming, and son of a gun, this is a bit of a secret, that their predictions, their initial papers, have all come true. With a little sidebar, the rapidity. Things are accelerating. The polar caps are melting faster than was projected. Well, they can be. I don't think that's, you know, a real disclaimer to the overall piece of work. The release of the carbon material from the tundra. The amount of material that was contained, gases that were contained in the tundra, is now being exposed to the atmosphere. Humans are largely accountable for this. But just like masonry, how do we make this change? How do we achieve our goal? One particle at a time. One particle at a time. You do what you can by being aware and demonstrating that awareness by your behavior to other people around. If it's if we see something blowing on the ground, and some piece of plastic or waste, it's not unusual to see somebody bend and pick it up. It's that sense that we have this growing aesthetic. I know I'm one of those people that wishes we had the sense of history. You know, I'm sentimental about, you know, for walking through Vienna, or we're in Munich or Paris or London or Beijing or Istanbul or Cairo, places where we can feel the history. This part of the world that I'm in, our country is so very young, but our history is hundreds of thousands of years old. We're sitting on Precambrian shield, some of it that formed just shortly after the Earth was forming. We have a history that's incomprehensible. I wish it was a building or a piece of statuary that I could look at and think, well, that's 15th century at its best. That's Michelangelo. I wish, it'd be nice. But in my mind, palace, I can travel to that part of the world. I can travel to Florence. And now, because of the advances of social media, I blame all of this on the original social media. That's that networking that was going on amongst our ancient brethren. This is the commentary for today. And I think you're going to like it. I hope you do. The Restlessness Within Freemasonry. It was insight about the need. Always about insight. What is that about? No. What is that? My goodness. I don't know. It's just what is what it is, eh? All right. So we have work to do here. It was insight about the need, appeal, and the vigilance of men seeking to use the opportunity that brought Freemasonry from the Highlands of Scotland into the hands of ambitious builders. I'm just saying, from this part of the world, when I looked up at the cosmos above us, I had a unique perspective on the stars. And if you looked up from where you are on the face of the earth, you also had a unique perspective. This is just about the story of what happened around this one. By professing a standard of living based on ethics and principles, Freemasonry never quite becomes deterministic. Never. It's not totalitarian. It leans toward shamanic or clairvoyant ideas of the areas of the imagination. Lovely. For those with an appetite for metaphysics, it is rewarding. And for the man of lesser ability or different ability, it offers a fond subordination that assures order while assuaging anxieties. There's an order, there's hope, there's structure. And how do I know? Because I know you, and you have expectations of me. If we search for answers, we learn that being transfixed has little use. We enter states of deeper contemplation through commonplace situational demands of life. We can be assured of an enriched experience of a life well beyond achievements in the marketplace or the esteem of our fellows. Life is a serious but not necessarily solemn matter for a true Mason. Next generations have been watching and asking questions. Is that all there is? The unhealthy lifestyles with too little time for family, sacrifices made for a job, for gain, they are no longer incentives. We have created what we have wished for. A generation that values the quality of life over quantity. Jobs with high social esteem that consume and define a person have lost incentive. We have wanted our children to experience equality. And they are. And we are lurching forward to adapt to change, just as we always have. Distance and time have been conquered by social media. For many of us, what a man has for dinner each day and why we would think he would want us to know is still a puzzle. But for networks of friends, they continue on a global level. Many of us will remember the first pictures of Earth from space. A blue global with swirls of clouds floating in darkness. It changed us forever into a global community that we could see firsthand. Watch what you wish for. It might come true. We are restless.
Eu sei que vou te amar, por toda a minha vida vou te amar, em cada despedida vou te amar, Desesperadamente eu sei que vou te amar, e cada verso meu será pra te dizer que eu sei que vou te amar por toda a minha vida. Eu sei que vou chorar a cada ausência tua, vou chorar, mas cada volta tua de apagar o que essa ausência tua me causou. Eu sei que vou sofrer a eterna desventura de viver à espera de viver ao lado teu por toda a minha vida. Eu vou sofrer a eterna desventura de viver à espera de viver ao lado teu por toda a minha vida. Eu sei que vou te amar.
Introducing Mr. and Mrs. T Classic Cocktails, a true reflection of a classic. Available in Strawberry Lime Daiquiri and Bahama Mama. Classics never go out of style.
Costa, beautiful. What a voice. What a talent. Here's a masterful piece of work. This is from the Romantic period. Talking about the poet Robert Browning. During the heyday, you say, the Victorian period. Lots of change. This is the mind that produced the quotes. He married Elizabeth Barrett Browning, another quite remarkable writer. Grow old with me, the best is yet to be. I like that. But a man's reach should his seed is grasp, or what to heaven for? Oh, how many times have I thought that? We just didn't know that it was Robert Browning that put those words to paper. All love begins and ends there. We're speaking about motherhood, the completeness of motherhood, the beauty, the romantic sense of events. He helped us to move beyond our existence, beyond our world. Today I'm going to share with you a poem called Caliban upon Setipos, one of the first poems to respond to Charles Darwin's On the Origin of Species. This was written in 1863, and you guessed it, it was a dramatic monologue. That was what Browning became quite famous for. And I'm drawn today, I'm sharing this with you, because as a student many years ago, I was introduced to English literature is part of a liberal education, thank goodness. And one of the poems that stuck in my mind was about a little friar, quite drunk, who had been out carousing, and he was crawling down the street, staggering down the street to get back to his residence. And he was in his long robes, and when two police happened by and questioned who this drunk was, and he sat down and told his story. Well, another time we'll share the story of Frau Lippi-Lippi. It's quite amazing. He happened to be it was the feature. He was a painter, believe it or not, and he was accosted. So anyway, an influential poem. But I'm going to share a bit about this with you. It's a little. I'm going to have to compress it because it's just something you want to. You'll see. It's just something that you want to savor. If you don't want to savor this, if you're not of the mind that this would simply be painful. Thou thoughtest that I was together such a one as thyself. That's Psalm 50, verse 21. Will sprawl now that the heat of day is best, flat on his belly in the pits, much mire. This was spoken by the native Caliban from the magical island in Shakespeare's The Tempest. Satibos was the invented name for the deity Caliban worships, and believing Satibos to be the creator of all things, the name is mentioned in Shakespeare's play. One of the surprising legacies of this is that one of the moons of the planet Uranus was named after Satibos. A little bit of backstory. With elbows wide, fists clenched to prop his chin, and while he kicks both feet in the cool slush and feels about his spine, small, eft things course, run in and out each arm and make him laugh. And while above his head a pompion plant coating the cave top as a brow, its eye creeps down to touch and tickle hair and beard, and now a flower drops with a bee inside, and now a fruit to snap at it, catch and crunch. He looks out or on sea, which sunbeams cross and recross until they weave a spider web, meshes of fire. Some great fish breaks at times and talks to his own self, however he please, touching that other whom his dam called God. Because to talk about him vexes, could he but know, and time to vex is now. When talk is safer than in winter time, moreover, Prosper and Miranda sleep. In confidence he drudges at their task, and it is good to cheat the pair and gibe, and letting the rank tongue blossom into speech. Satibos, 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 thinketh. He dwelleth aye the cold or the moon. Thinketh he made it in the sun to match, and not the stars. The stars came otherwise, only made clouds, winds, meteors, and such as that. And this isle that lives and grows thereon, and snaky sea that rounds and ends the same. Thinketh it came of being ill at ease. He hated that he cannot change his cold nor cure his ache. Hath spied an icy fish that longed to escape the rock stream where she lived, and thaw herself within the lukewarm brine of the lazy sea, her stream thrusts far amid it, a crystal spike twixt two warm walls of wave. Only she ever sickened, found repulse at the other kind of root water, not her life, green, dense, and dim, delicious, bread of the sun, flaunts back from bliss. She was not born to breathe, and in her old bounds buried her despair, hating and loving warmth alike. So he. Robert Browning. This is Avishai Cohen, the quartet. I think this is from a concert in Austria, was it not? Maybe it was Belgium. Cohen, Jazz Music Festival. It's in France, yeah. Sorry, I'm misleading you all over the place. One of the beautiful things about masonry is that it contains these amazing imaginative ideas. You know that human mind can do some pretty amazing things. When we dream, time is distorted in a way. It's not linear, no longer linear in our dreams or in our imagination. You ever dream and little snippets of things from different periods of your life seem to be in the same storyline? And you're sort of left puzzled. Why am I thinking about that relationship and then this new one and the anticipation of anxiety for tomorrow? Well, in the brain, in the human mind, that's where I separate this. I'm talking about that organic feature, I'm talking about the mind. Time is fluid. And you wonder, we have to wonder if there's not something going on in the mind that is an accurate reflection of something we don't yet understand. Is time, I want to think when I look at my watch and have no idea what it is that's being measured, I want to think it's linear, just because I've been taught that. But what if we are particles and waves at the same time? Quantum mechanics has taught us that that's the case. And what if time is fluid? Oh, quite amazing, isn't it? Quite amazing. To think that we have so many amazing symbols that are fluid as well. I think here today we're going to talk a bit more about symbolism and masonry, that sort of that other reflection, that other window into knowledge and experience. But it's also a teaser. It's like a, it's like that generous free zone. You know that emotion when you're listening to very music and it's very loud and you're in, you know, you're sitting in a symphony or you're listening to the opera or you're at a concert of your favorite music. No matter what it is, remember that feeling that you get where the you have a physical reaction to it and it feels great. It's like this elation and you have the goosebumps. Free zone. Yeah, it's an emotion. Yeah? It's a reaction. Well, we have symbols that seem to be as fluid as. Does it bring this up? If you think very deeply, as Joseph Campbell had suggested, that we search for that bliss, that free zone. Here's something that we hear quite commonly and frequently in Masonry. It's reference to this temple, King Solomon's temple. My goodness. And initially wonder, oh, is this something to do with our infusion of Hebrew and Jewish symbols, is it? Well, I don't know. I've been sort of at the door, scratching at the surface of Kabbalah for quite a number of years now. And I really intellectually can't really move on until I understand more. The Tree of Life, yeah, I can get that. Some of the simpler for me. But the fact that the rabbis decided that it should be open to knowledge wasn't secret, but the way it could be conveyed to the likes of me was remarkable. It gave just created this opportunity. And I think I'm not the only one that would stumble along with its meaning, because that's what I do struggling to understand. Here, we'll help that struggle. The imagination, and you know I've spoken about us having that mind palace. So, where is the temple? Well, we know that one existed probably about 1,500 years before the claims made it by Anderson. The dedication of King Solomon's temple is recorded in 1 Kings, in chapter 8, and therefore a Mason's lodge must similarly be dedicated to God. The lodge was also dedicated to King Solomon, according to the old lectures. While records of obligations used up till about 1816 have, as their wording, dedicated to God and his service in the Holy Apostle St. John. This dedication to St. John is of some antiquity, and references to it occur in some of the older documents. Hence, the craft degrees were often known as St. John's Masonry. And an unattached Mason, a very common occurrence in the early days, as a St. John's Mason. If a lodge were dedicated to God, then it must stand on dedicated or holy ground. There are many references and reasons in the old lectures relating to lodges standing on holy ground. These relate to Moses and the burning bush in Exodus, Joshua and the angel in Joshua chapter 5, and the consecration of the first lodge and of Solomon's temple, and the symbolic holding of lodges on high ground, such as Mount Moriah, or in valleys. This last led to a symbolic valley of Jehoshaphat, referred to by William Hutchinson in 1775. He said, "We place the spiritual lodge in the Vale of Jehoshaphat, implying therefore that the principles of Freemasonry are derived from the knowledge of God and are established in the judgment of the Lord." The literal translation of the word Jehoshaphat from the Hebrew tongue being no other than those express words. The highest hills and lowest valleys were from the earliest times esteemed as sacred, and it was supposed the Spirit of God was peculiarly diffused in those places. You see that in Ezekiel. "Upon the top of the mountain and the whole limit thereof round about shall be most holy, and And it is said in the Old Testament that the Spirit of God buried Moses in a valley in the land of Moab, implying that there were divine influence. He was interred in such hallowed retirement. On Elijah's translation, the sons of the prophet said to Elisha, "Behold now that there be servants, 50 strong men. Let them go, we pray thee, and seek thy master. At least peradventure the Spirit of the Lord hath taken them up and cast him upon some mountain or into some valley." Hence was derived the veneration paid to such places in the earliest ages. The entrance. With the seed of wisdom and of King Solomon in the east of a lodge, and the progress of the new initiate to start from an entrance in the west, there is an immediate analogy of progress in King Solomon's temple. From an entrance at one end, through a middle chamber symbolized in the second degree, to the Holy of Holies in the far end, the most important features of that progress were the two great pillars which stood at the entrance. After the master, the two most important officers in the lodge were his wardens. What more natural than that the wardens of a lodge should be identified with those pillars? Before 1810, many lodges, and particularly those under the Grand Lodge formed in 1717, some moderns, placed both wardens in the west with the symbolic entrance of the lodge between them. Thus, when entering the lodge, which was a representation of King Solomon's temple, the candidates quite genuinely became the symbolic, came between the symbolic pillars of the entrance, as represented by the two wardens, with the representation of the king himself in the person of the master situated in the east. This arrangement still applies in some constitutions. In the first half of the century, of the 18th century, there were several references to Mason's processions. The wardens, each having a column in his hand, for these columns were the wardens' symbols of office, the two columns of King Solomon's temple. Until nearly the end of the 18th century, they were the only pillars in a Mason's lodge and were regarded also as the depository of those essential attributes of a lodge, wisdom, strength, and beauty. For they were the pillars upon whose base is wisdom, whose shaft is strength, and whose chapiter is beauty. Traditionally, the junior warden has responsibility for the apprentices and the senior warden for the craftsmen. This may be the reason why, in some rites tracing from the old French system of the earlier 1700s, the wages were paid to the workmen at the foot of the appropriate column. In English masonry, this was one of the features of William Preston's system in the days before the Union of Grand Lodge, but it has not survived. Dr. Oliver was nearly as great a collector of the works of earlier writings as was William Preston, and he writes thus of the two pillars at the entrance. Ancient tradition says that the shafts were covered with astronomical and Masonic figures, characters, and calculations, and the hollow space in the interior served as archives of masonry and to hold the constitutional record. Each had a vase rising from the cylindrical shaft ornamented with lotus flowers. The bottom of the vase was partly hidden by the flowers. The belly of it was overlaid with network ornamented by 7 wreaths, the Hebrew number of happiness. They were further adorned with chapiters of 5 cubits in height, enriched with network, chains, lilies, and pomegranates, emblematical of unity, fortitude, peace, and plenty. They had a double row of the latter, each containing 100 pomegranates, and on the summit were placed 2 spherical balls to represent the earth and heavens as symbols of the universality of masonry. It is difficult, say the lectures at this distant time, to state the precise ornaments and combinations of these emblems, but our traditions give us to understand that the chapters respectively represented the whole system of creation, celestial and terrestrial. This conjecture is founded upon the symbolical reference of these ornaments, which now, descriptive soever they may be in the union, the strength, the beauty, and plenty which the people of Israel enjoyed under the mild sway of that wisest and best of kings, are emblems of far more extensive signification. The network refers to the strong and beautiful texture of the universe. The chains denote the orbits which the planetary bodies describe around the sun, and their revolutions on their several axes. The open flowers point out the mild irradiation of the fixed stars, and the pomegranate was invariably used throughout all antiquity to denote the secret power by which the works of nature were initiated, originated, and matured. We need to come back to this, don't we? Now think how fluid the time is. And it's the imagery, the metaphor, the symbol. What does it convey? Well, first, let's just admit that it does exist, and that we're studying something that has been a hybrid, a development, an evolution of what was. It's interesting for some of us to think that we need to understand where we were in order to understand how we arrived at the time we are now. Not to say one is better or worse. It is what it is. They are what they are. But the symbol of the temple tells us, reveals things. If we study, maybe the greatest sense of drive that exists for Masons is the need to fill that darkness, that where there's questions, where we may not even be noticing. It's not necessarily ignorance, it's youthfulness. It's that we haven't got there yet. Give us some time. We need some time, and we need to want it, don't we? Here, a little something from Austria at Jazz Lives in Syria to our listeners in Austria and the future listeners in Syria. May peace be with you. There they go off in that groove. Not bad. Nim Sokan. Not bad at all. Perhaps you will connect with that music. Maybe it's connecting with you. Anyway, I see that we have to step it along. Our time together is growing short again. Thank you for tuning in today. We have a lifetime of study ahead of us, and we can join together and share some of the enthusiasm we feel. You are uncommon, you're unconventional, and there's no way around that. It's the wonderment of Freemasonry that our questions are being answered. It doesn't necessarily mean we stop asking the questions. And sometimes, as history teaches us, we need to ask those questions two or three times or over, and they don't always result in the kind of answers that we want to hear. Be aware that our tendency is to only like the things that agree with us. There's not much growth in that, not much growth at all. So if you have singularly channeled yourself, challenged yourself, and you're moving forward in your life, in that fluid escape, that fluid expanse of time. Thank you again for tuning in. Brazil, good luck with the World Cup. I would say the same to our German listeners in Canada. Thank you for, you know, pulling together. We are a nation strong. United States, there's hope. There's always hope. The listeners in China and Russia, just absolutely amazing. Uganda and Cameroon, thank you for tuning in. I look forward to sitting in lodge with each and every one of you. In the meantime, commit those acts of random Masonic kindness, especially when the people don't know it's you. The very best. Huh? Talk to you again soon. Oui, il répond à l'hiver.
Yeah.